You're tuned to The Weekend, a weekly public affairs show which airs every Saturday right here on KTEP. Good afternoon. I'm Louis Sines, your host for The Weekend. And join us today are John Ballou and Dr. Christy Mena. John is the El Paso Water president and CEO, and Dr. Mena is a microbiologist and public service board member, and she's also the dean of the UT Houston School of Public Health. Thank you all very much for joining us this morning. Let's talk a little bit. First of all, let's start with you, John. As the president and CEO of the El Paso Water Utilities, what exactly is it that you all do? Because a lot of people don't understand and may not know that you do a lot more besides just run the water system here in El Paso County.
That's a good question, and we do a lot more. So we do not only the drinking water, we do a reclaimed water system, we have a wastewater system that we operate, and the stormwater utility. In addition to that, we are the trustee for about 20,000 acres of land that are in El Paso County that we manage, that were purchased by the ratepayers back in the 1950s for the purposes of water supply.
As far as water usage, I know that, it's been over 30 years since I worked in television news, but when I did, we used to do stories sometimes about the possibility of us running out of water and where we were going to get that water if we needed to. But is that still the situation?
No, we're not going to run out of water. And I think that's the good news triumph over that last 30 years, as you pointed out. So El Paso has made a lot of deliberate efforts to make sure that we don't run out of water. And those deliberate efforts include heavy emphasis on water conservation, plus bringing on some additional sources. Back 30 years ago, we had the Rio Grande, the Hueco Bolson Aquifer, and the Mesilla Bolson Aquifer. Now we have our reclaimed water system, and we have the desal plant. And within the next 10 years, we're going to add another component to that, which is our advanced purified plant. And then later on, we still have other sources of supply that we can bring on board. So the good news is that we have a sustainable supply. We have some additional things that we're working on to accommodate growth that's going to take place in the El Paso area.
And we'll get back to talk a little bit more about water conservation in just a minute. But as I mentioned at the top of our interview, we also have Dr. Christy Mena with us. Christy is the dean of the School of Public Health, UT Houston School of Public Health. She's also a microbiologist and public service board manager. And Christy, those are a lot of hats you have to wear there. Tell us a little bit about your job.
Well, I do wear a lot of hats, but what I like about it is that there's a common thread with all of them, and that's water. So by training, I'm an environmental microbiologist, and I've always been interested in water quality and looking at various water sources throughout the United States. But in my role as the dean of the UT Houston School of Public Health, I also oversee the program in environmental health. And so water is one of our top priorities.
What is it that we need to, we're not really be concerned, but perhaps informed and educated about water safety? And what is water safety?
I think it's important to understand the importance of drinking water treatment and how blessed we are that we have access every day to potable water, quality water. That isn't the case in every part of the world. But if we think about the way we live our lives now and how we live longer than ever before, that's primarily due to public health achievements. And I think that the implementation of drinking water treatment is probably one of the greatest public health achievements over the past 100 years.
One of the things that, going back again to when I worked in television news, there were stories about El Paso County and expanding and how it was growing outward, which was great for people who wanted to buy land and have an opportunity to expand their roots. However, one of the problems was that a lot of these places didn't have running water, didn't have good drinking water, and sometimes these people were forced to keep water in big drums, and I'm sure that that wasn't very safe.
Right. Several years ago, UT Houston conducted a study here with our community partners and neighborhoods throughout El Paso, looking at drinking water quality and how it relates to how people store their water. And definitely, storing water in open containers for lengthy periods of time will impact the quality.
What are some of the things that you all are doing right now?
really looking at establishing improved community partners to understand what's important to people so that they inform us of what type of work they like to see done in terms of public health and improving their lives. So we do a lot of work within neighborhoods, various nonprofits, various community groups to learn from them what they would like us to address. And it runs everything from, you know, potential chemicals in the environment due to, you know, byproducts of industry, to food safety issues, to air quality, you know, anything you can think of that's related to environmental health.
We are visiting with John Ballou and Dr. Christy Mena with El Paso Water, and we're discussing water issues here in El Paso, water conservation, of course, a lot of things that the El Paso Water is doing to improve those situations here in El Paso. I don't know if you want to call it a fad or not, but it seems like, you know, when you and I grew up, we would drink water right out of the hose, just take a drink whenever we could. But now it seems like a lot of people won't drink water unless it's bottled water, and then not realizing that maybe it's bottled, but you don't know how that is made, and there are so many kinds to choose from, you're not sure what to do.
Yes, and I think what we are at this point is the victim of a marketing campaign that has pushed us in that direction. And yes, I drank out of the hose many, many times and didn't have any problems with it. But you correctly pointed out, most of the bottled water is perfectly safe. It's taken, let's say the water that you get here from in El Paso, for example, comes from our system. They take drinking water right out of the tap, perhaps run it through a reverse osmosis system to change the taste of the water. Perhaps they add some magnesium or some other chemicals to affect the taste, put it into a bottle, and sell it for hundreds or thousands of times the dollar amount that, you know, you pay for the tap water. And it's strictly based on marketing. Has nothing to do with water safety. There is an aspect of taste to it because in the tap water, it's perfectly safe. It has a well-balanced combination of minerals, calcium, magnesium. But some people, you know, like to have it a little bit different, like to have less calcium and magnesium and more sodium and potassium. So there's a variety of different choices that they have to make.
Some people have said that really what bottled water does for us is just a matter of convenience because you're not going to find a garden hose everywhere you go, or you're not going to find the water fountain. So taking that is an easy way to go and go on a trip, whatever you need to do.
Yes, and of course there's nothing wrong with that. And we don't, you know, try to discourage that. We don't feel that we're in competition with bottled water because water that goes into customers' homes is used for a variety of different things. Most of it is, in fact, not used for drinking. So you have evaporative air conditioning, you have your dishwashing, food preparation, bathing, removal of waste from the house. So the water that is purchased from El Paso Water has many different uses. And you're right. Bottled water is convenient. Take in your car or go somewhere. But we don't really feel that we're in competition. What we like to make sure is that the water that comes out of the tap in the customer's home is very, very safe.
How do you do that?
Okay, so that's a good question. It starts at the source of the water. So in El Paso, we have several different sources of supply. And I would really consider that as one of the great things about El Paso. We have the Rio Grande. We have two different aquifers. And both of those aquifers, we have fresh water and we have brackish water to choose from. And so we produce water from all those different sources. And we have state-of-the-art treatment plants. We use activated carbon. We use ozone. We have a variety of technologies to make sure the water is safe. And we have a state-of-the-art laboratory. So we start at the source, the water that comes out of the Rio Grande, even upstream from El Paso, collecting samples, doing analysis through the treatment plant. The water adds into the distribution system, and we even go into people's houses and collect samples directly from the customer tap just to make sure it's all safe.
Christy, tell us a little bit about what you do as a microbiologist. What specifically are you looking for when you go out and test waters?
Sure. Well, one of my areas is human health risk assessment, and so I'm interested in testing the water for various chemicals and microorganisms and then translating that information to human health impact. And so what I'm interested in is finding out, are there hazards in a water supply, first? Second, are they disease-causing? And then third, are they at levels that could be harmful to human health? And I think one of the messages that's important to understand is that, as everyone can imagine, we have better technologies than ever before. And we're able to detect very, very low levels of constituents in our water supplies. But just because we can detect them doesn't mean that they weren't present years ago. And it doesn't mean that they're harmful to human health.
Living on the border, many of us remember, or perhaps we're even told, you go to another country, don't drink the water. And that was like the biggest concern that I'm sure a lot of children, when they grew up, they were probably afraid to take a drink of something because they didn't know where it came from.
Right. And that's possible. When we think about source waters and where different locations obtain their source water, it could contain different constituents or different contaminants. When we think about the various microorganisms such as Giardia that are waterborne and which is very common, and other protozoa parasites, some of us can be carriers of those protozoa. Some of us can be asymptomatic. So if we're exposed to those organisms again, we may not show symptoms, while others may show symptoms and experience the gastroenteritis or, you know, the illness that you're talking about.
Are there particular diseases or dangers out there, especially during this time of year when it's so hot?
For different pathogens or disease-causing microorganisms, there are different seasons, you know, to watch in terms of environmental microbiology. Viruses, enteric viruses in particular, sometimes we see a peak during the warm summer months, for example. But I think it's just important to understand that water utilities are vigilant year-round and that those public health safeguards are in place.
John, tell us a little bit about, as we discuss water conservation, for many years, El Paso was on a water conservation campaign. And from what I understand is that the people here in El Paso did tremendous good job of, you know, not wasting water. What are the things that you look at specifically during the hot summer months?
Well, from a water conservation standpoint, what takes place in the summer months is landscape irrigation. And what we concentrate on in terms of water conservation is not trying to stop it, but just to make sure that people are using the water efficiently. Because one of the things that we see is very, very common is for someone to stand out there with a hose watering and they're not on a timer, it's not being evenly distributed. And so those are kind of inefficient ways of using water, whereas a properly regulated sprinkler system, applying exactly how much water the plant needs to thrive in the hot summer is exactly what's needed. So mostly what we do in terms of water conservation is geared towards that education on efficient uses of water.
What about, like you just mentioned, somebody out there just with their water hose. Sometimes we think, well, it's been very hot and I didn't water the last couple of days. So in our mind, we think the more water I can flood this place and it'll be better because I missed 2 days.
Right. And so what's best is to obtain a relatively inexpensive soil moisture monitor. You just stick it into the ground and it'll tell you whether you need water or not. So just because you haven't watered in 2 days doesn't necessarily mean you need to water now. But by the same token, when you look at the surface of the ground, or if you have grass, you can't even see the soil might have plenty of moisture in it. So the best way to do it is, of course, to have a regular schedule where you're applying just the amount of water that's needed. But if you miss it for whatever reason, get one of those inexpensive meters, stick it into the ground. It'll tell you whether you need to water or not.
Do we still have a watering schedule? Is it on during the summer only or is it throughout the year?
Okay, so we have two different things. We have a day-a-week watering schedule based on your addresses, odd and even. Monday is a non-watering day for residential customers. It's a watering day for parks and other commercial irrigators, and that's all the time. But from April through October, I think it is, we have a time of day watering restrictions. And the basic idea there is, for example, right now in the heat of the summer day, it's not efficient to be spraying water because you're evaporating a large amount of it. And it's surprising how much water you can evaporate in the dry El Paso air on a hot summer day. You can evaporate a lot of water. So the time of day restrictions is really geared towards making sure that people, again, use their water efficiently so that they're not evaporating most of the water that comes out of the sprinkler.
Sometimes we see sprinklers as we're walking around town or driving, and most of that water is ending up on the sidewalk or something else.
Yes. And so part of our effort is educational and part of our effort is enforcement. So we do have two water conservation. We like to refer to them as technicians. Mm-hmm. Some people like to refer to them as cops, but they go around and their primary effort, again, is to educate. So if they see that happening, then they'll stop in, they'll talk to the customer, encourage the customer to address whatever they might need to do to change, replace a sprinkler head, reposition a sprinkler head. And they'll be more than happy to help them out. And we can do that also. Check the efficiency of the sprinkler systems and just make sure it's operating very well so that water doesn't end up on the sidewalk or the street where it's just wasted.
We are visiting with John Ballou, El Paso Water President and CEO, and Dr. Christy Mena. Dr. Mena is a microbiologist and public service board member. She is also a dean of the School of Public Health, UT Houston School of Public Health. Christy, tell us a little bit about what are some of the things that your department does as far as safety issues for water users in El Paso and some of the consumers who may just be coming through as well.
So for the UT Houston School of Public Health and just a broader view, first of all, we have six campuses, including Houston, around the state. And so we are able to tap into lots of resources and lots of experts within our school who are either environmental microbiologists or environmental scientists. And so when we focus on El Paso, as some of the highlights that have already been mentioned, El Paso is a unique community on the border in a very dry, arid region, and where water conservation has been a top priority for so many years. So I think it is about partnering with the community and informing them of water conservation and water quality.
And is there something that perhaps we need to address even further? Because I guess the key is educating the public.
Right. And I really like to think of it as engaging and learning from them as well. When I first moved here about 19 years ago, and I became more aware of the different neighborhoods and those that did not have access to potable water and the way they were obtaining their water and storing their water, that was really the key. And that was very eye-opening to me because it was the way they were storing their water for lengthy periods of time that was potentially creating problems within their household health.
Another safety issue that perhaps may come up is, as John and I discussed earlier, it's very convenient to grab some bottled water and take it with you. But sometimes we leave that bottle in the car and it stays there for 2-3 hours at over 100 degrees. Is that safe to drink still?
No, I would say no. And there's actually not only anecdotal information about this, but also published studies that have looked at situations where people have, yes, left bottled water in the car, left it on their nightstand for a week at a time, and then perhaps then experience symptoms that could be related to a waterborne illness. And those types of investigations have been published, and water quality and bottles left open for lengthy periods of time have been evaluated. And it's not a good idea to do that because it's open to the environment, and we don't live in a sterile environment.
So even inside, it's not good to leave it unattended for a long time.
Right, not good. I mean, and some people just have a practice of taking a bottle of water, not just in the car with them, but, at night, leaving on the nightstand, and it might stay there for a week. And that's probably not a good idea.
So you shouldn't say, well, this is from last Christmas, so I
should take this right now. So once someone's, when you think about it and you've taken drinks out of it yourself and then you've introduced hazards, microbial hazards, for example, then those can proliferate in that environment over an extended period of time.
I know last summer the biology department here had a conference where they were looking at, I forgot the name of the parasite that lives in the mm-hmm. water, but apparently when it does rain and even just pooled water, it's very dangerous. And if a dog or a child comes and drinks some of that, it's very dangerous.
Right. And so it's just important for us to think about in our everyday lives how we can contribute to situations or conditions that could pose a hazard. And so that's a classic example of that. And there's so many different ways that water can pose a human health threat that has nothing to do with water quality and water leaving the tap. It's standing water. It's attracting mosquitoes. It's all the other water-related diseases that are probably more important in this region than water quality.
Is there anything that either one of you recommend for a consumer to perhaps carry with them if they go somewhere camping, whatever, and they want to purify the water somehow? Can that be done?
So camping, for sure, there's many different products that you can use. So there are little mini ceramic filters where you have perhaps a little crank that you use to push the water through a ceramic filter, and that will remove many of these pathogens that Christy was talking about that are found in the environment, are not only found in the urban environment, but they're also found in nature everywhere. So for sure, if you're going to be out camping, let's say, even next to a beautiful stream like the Gila River, for example, for sure, I would want to filter that water through one of those ceramic membrane filters just to be safe.
They sell, though, the water filters that people can buy and add to their water bottle. And, of course, we know the company who sells pitchers and all that stuff with a filter. Are those filters recommended? And are they – how long do they usually last? Do you have to change them, like, after a couple months?
So I wouldn't recommend it at all. And the reason that I say that is because people don't change them. They don't follow the directions with it. They just assume, I have a filter, I put it in here, it's going to be good to go, whether it's a week from now or 2 weeks or 2 years from now. But that's chances are that's not the way those things operate, that they have to be disposed of on a regular basis, or you have to do some sort of sterilization step. So I think it's better just not to deal with it and just to replenish your source of supply. Here in the urban environment, it's very easy to do. So I would very much discourage those filters because I think they can do more harm than good. They create a false sense of security when actually you're introducing a problem into the equation.
What about if someone at home suddenly decides my water doesn't taste good, it tastes kind of funny, and somebody else says, well, I don't taste any difference, it's fine. And I know that's happened at our house, and I guess I'll drink anything. But my wife will sometimes say, no, you need to make sure that, you know, this is clear or this is good. And sometimes people will open up the water faucet and they'll see that perhaps it's a little bit cloudy and then it'll clear up again. Is that normal?
That is normal. So what do you describe, the cloudiness that disappears on its own is simply air, very, very tiny bubbles of air that get trapped in the water. But you're right. From time to time, the taste of the water does change. And in El Paso, what that means is that in some times of the year, we have water that we bring out of the river. So depending on where you live and the time of day and the season, you could be getting water from the desal plant or from one of the aquifers or from the surface water treatment plant. And we try to make sure that they all taste the same. But as you pointed out correctly, some people are much more susceptible to very, very small changes in taste than others. I myself, you know, am not that sensitive to taste. In fact, I was just at the desal plant earlier today, and the water that comes into the desal plant is about 4,000 parts per million of salt. I can't tell the difference between that and drinking water. So I'm probably on the far end of the scale that has no ability to taste things. But there are other people that are on the very sensitive end of the scale where very slight changes and a little bit of sodium here, a little bit of potassium there can affect the change. But it doesn't mean the water is not safe. The air entrained in the water that you mentioned, if you put a glass of water, it's cloudy, you put it on the counter, it clears up within a few minutes. That's just air. That's still not a health hazard.
We've been talking about drinking. We've been talking about bottled water, a faucet, tap water. But then there's some people who may have issues with, bathing, swimming pool, anything like that that water is used for besides drinking. Is there anything that you all would like to say about that?
Well, you know, one of the great things about water is that there's many different uses for it, right? And recreation is certainly one of those uses. El Paso is not a big water recreation city where we're right on a lake and you can go out on a boat with your water skis and whatnot. But swimming is certainly something that's recreational. So you have splash pools, you have water parks, and you have swimming pools, all of which, when properly and efficiently operated, are not a burden on the system. When we talk about water supply, the water supply that we have to produce, most of it is in single-family residential homes. So a swimming pool here, a swimming pool there, a water park here, a water park there, it's not really affecting the water supply for the city. But I think that water recreation is an important part of the quality of life in El Paso, so we don't discourage it.
We are visiting with John Ballou and Dr. Christy Mena. Did you want to add something, John?
I would like to talk a little bit more about water chemistry. So you asked about, you know, the taste of water, but one of the things that I would encourage people to do is to come and visit our laboratory. I think people would be astounded if they saw how large and how well-equipped our water quality laboratory is. And so we have people that are out collecting samples almost every day. On Sundays, I don't believe we collect samples, but for 6 days a week, we collect samples for all sorts of things. And if a person calls up and they want their water tested, we will test it for them. So there's no need for them to go in an expensive laboratory or, what's worse, have a test done for somebody who wants to sell you something on the basis of that test. That, you know, is absolutely asking for trouble, because they're going to find something so that they can sell you something. So we offer that testing as a service. We have a state-of-the-art laboratory, and we take water safety very, very seriously.
What about what you were just talking about, testing and making sure that everything is okay? As you mentioned, there are people out there marketing, as you said at the beginning of the interview, the fact that marketing is out to get you, and they're going to make you think, like the placebo effect, the fact that, yeah, there is something wrong here, so you need to get this. Or you see your neighbor who is suddenly sporting a new water bottle with X number of bottles that they have at Sam's or one of the other warehouses, and so you go out and spend what some people call needless money.
Absolutely needless money, and especially some of these treatment systems can be extraordinarily expensive. And so not only are they not necessary, because the water that we deliver to the customer's tap is extremely safe and very well tested, you can actually be introducing a problem, because a system like that that's not properly maintained and you're not sure what sort of materials are inside there, they can actually be introducing contaminants into the system.
We are visiting also with Dr. Christy Mann, a microbiologist, public service board member. She's the dean of the School of Public Health, UT Houston. Christy, is there anything that your students, your department is doing that perhaps you would like our listeners to be aware of?
I think just as I mentioned earlier, working with different community groups and neighborhoods so that people understand where their drinking water comes from. I mean, that's one thing that I've learned in the classroom, is that a lot of people do not know where their drinking water comes from. And you know, I've been here for many years, but I'm from Indiana originally, and I moved around a lot. And I can say I didn't know where my drinking water came from until I became more interested in water. And I think, you know, it's fascinating when we think about what we learned in grade school about the water cycle and how it moves through the environment and how it impacts our lives. And so doing that type of engagement with the community and informing them, people then become more interested and they want to learn more about their drinking water and El Paso water.
So what we've been discussing here this morning, if someone wants to get additional information, could you all give us your webpage or a phone number where they can call to find out more information?
So our website is epwater.org, and we have a variety of information on there. There is a water quality tab that you can look at all sorts of things. We have something that we produce called a Consumer Confidence Report, which is extremely detailed information. We have all sorts of things about water quality. We would encourage you to go there. And if you have something where you need to call, you want to talk to somebody, you want to have somebody come out and take a look, we have our water quality hotline is 594-5733.
Well, thank you all very much for being with us here today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We've been visiting with John Ballou. He is the El Paso Water President and CEO, and Dr. Christy Mena, microbiologist, public service board member. She is also the dean of the School of Public Health, Houston School of Public Health. Thank you so much again for being with us. The Weekend is taped and produced at the KTP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer, Quincy Walter. We had help from Yasmin Ornelas and Alejandra Zamora. Our producer is Vasil Zabedal. You've been tuned to The Weekend. I'm Luis Sainz.